Okay, thanks, Mike. At this point, I don't see any other council hands. I'm going to go to the public, and I would be, please ask the public, ask your question and get your answer, if you don't mind. Ms. Brady.
Hi, Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I'm wondering regarding why NIMS did not require any kind of project level survey mitigation for Vineyard Wind. Is that something that would be something you would normally do? Can we look toward that with future future wind, not the lease areas and or the project areas specifically?
Thank you, Bonnie. Good to hear your voice. How can I answer that question? If I heard the question right, is why did NIMS not require? It's a simple answer. We don't have a mechanism to require mitigation. The decision maker on these projects lies with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. We can provide our recommendations, advice, technical expertise, and work cooperatively with BOEM, which we have. And I think the Vineyard Wind one project does an excellent job describing interactions with federal surveys, but the record of decision that outlines any mitigation actions is a decision that's made by the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. That within the record of decision, there is a description of a programmatic solution to survey mitigation, you know, for us to work cooperatively with BOEM and with the developers to outline steps to address federal survey mitigation at a regional or larger level. But you are correct, there are no specific measures for the Vineyard Wind project or project level. No fisheries does not have an authority that would allow us to impose such a requirement.
If I could ask one follow-up, please.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So as BOEM, as the lead agency, even though you consult, you don't have any other input other than a consult-only basis for that, and BOEM makes the final decision, which would be Department of Interior. Is that correct?
I might need Pete to help me answer this, but or Brian, because I'm on the side. You know, we're the science nerds, not the regulatory nerds. But my understanding is that, you know, the record of decision is a Bureau of Ocean Energy Management decision document. We utilize that record of decision in order to support our implementation of like the Marine Mammal Protection Act incidental take authorization. But we provide recommendations and advice to BOEM for areas of intersection with no equities. So it's a cooperating agency role, not a decision making role. I don't know, Pete, if you're still on, he might be able to answer that question better than I have.
No, if you don't mind, Mr. Vice Chair, if I can jump in.
I'll go right ahead, Pete.
I really don't have anything to add other than what Andy said. I think that his the way that he's characterized it is correct.
Okay, great. Well, Bonnie, I tell you what, Mr. Hooker is next. Maybe if he can answer that question at the end of his presentation, I'll let him do so. Does that work for you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, great. Anybody else from the public? Seeing none, back to the council. I don't see any. So thank you very much, Mr. Lipsky. Appreciate it. Mr. Hooker, you're up next. Whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brian Hooker, and I am a the biology team lead at the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's Office of Renewable Energy Programs, as you can see on the slide here. Thanks for the opportunity today. I think the focus of today's presentation is primarily on the open comment period we currently have for proposed sale areas in the New York Bight. But next slide, please. So, yeah, just you can keep flipping through. again, you guys are very familiar with this slide. This is just an update to where we are. I think Pete covered this fairly well. Where we are, we have 14 construction and operations plans submitted. We anticipate another two within the next 12 months. That gets us to that 16 number that I think some people have heard. That 14 number will eventually drop to 13 and one approved with Vineyard Wind. And as you know, the leasing under consideration is now increased with the notice on last Monday of the New York Bight proposed sale areas, which I'll get to now. So as a refresher for this council, the New York Bight leasing process has been going on for quite some time. Here is the relative fishing relative use index that BOEM developed several years ago, that kind of gives an idea of when these initial at this point call areas were developed and then eventually became wind energy areas and now are lease areas. So again, this is showing using that the fisheries revenue exposure. Pete talked about this a little bit earlier. NIMS now has GARFO now maintains an active web page with very, very helpful, useful information on the economic exposure data. But that economic exposure data has been around for quite some time and was utilized here along with AIS data to really get at how important these areas are to individual fisheries, so that we're meant to be comparing fisheries on a more of an equal level, so that we're not valuing a high economic output fishery more than a potentially a low economic output fishery, more about how important these particular areas are to each of those top fisheries, fishery management plans. So again, this is just to orient you to the area that we're talking about and the relative use. Next slide, please. So again, I mentioned the timeline going back to September 2017. Keep hitting return. Back in 2018, we had the initial call for information and nominations. Okay, next, click. We had 2018, our draft wind energy areas. Moving forward to 2019, we had a New York Bight Transit Lane workshop that was hosted by NYSERDA and RODA. And next, and keeping moving forward through 2020, we got some additional areas from the Department of Defense on some areas they had concerns with. In March 2021, just this year, we announced the wind energy areas. And in April this year, we did have a task force meeting previewed the proposed sale areas. And then on June 14th, we published the proposed sale notice with a 60-day comment period. And that's the 60-day comment period that we just announced. Concurrent with that, we also did publish the notice of intent to prepare an environmental assessment for that. And I'll get into that a little bit further as well. Next slide. So again, just to orient you to where we are, I think if you click one more, we are there. Right at the proposed sale notice area and the 60-day comment period with the sale notice later. Nope, that's okay. I think I was done with that slide. You can go ahead. The step is the environmental assessment. Now, again, I think as many of you are familiar with, the environmental assessment We'll look at lease issuance and activities that are done basically between lease issuance and the submittal of a construction and operations plan. So basically that environmental assessment looks primarily at geophysical surveys, deployment of meteorological ocean buoys, and so forth to collect metocean data and wind speed data and geophysical data. So we'll assess the impacts of those types of activities on the environment. We did an initial scoping period for that, which ended in April 28th, and then we will again publish a notice of availability, which will start the comment period for the EA. Next slide, please. So what is in the proposed sale notice? In the proposed sale notice, which is what we have open for comment period right now, the areas for leasing, the fiscal terms, auction details and format, proposed lease terms, and again, more for the developer side, opportunity for qualification materials, and so forth. That's the one of the main focuses of the proposed sale notice. But next slide. So in there, we on our website, you'll find those actual proposed lease documents for each of these potential lease areas. There are 8 areas totaling about 627,000 acres. That was, I think, around a 900,000 acre reduction from the wind energy area. Oh, excuse me, from the call area. They represent about 7.6 gigawatts conservatively. And, you know, we think that they represent a balance between existing uses and the needs of the industry, or the needs of the industry to meet demands for power purchase agreements from eastern states. So fairways north and south, as I think many are aware, were removed from this leasing process, and at this point, in part due to maritime traffic, a proposed fairway that the United States Coast Guard is considering, commercial fisheries, and also commercial viability. Next slide, please. So again, just some areas that are still in active discussion. There's the proposed tug and tow lane that crosses kind of from a southwest to a northeast direction that transits across the fairway south and fairways north, and part of that, lease area A and the Hudson North area, it may be adjacent to those. And then as well as ongoing analysis by the Department of Defense on some of their activities that occur in that area. The next slide, please. So I did want to return us again to that transit lane workshop that was held by NYSERDA. Up on Long Island a few years ago. The results of that workshop were very useful for BOEM in trying to figure out the proposed lease areas and areas for transit between lease areas. So that was that full workshop report is available on NYSERDA's website, and I believe that was in June of 2020. So what BOEM did is looked at those areas, tried to mirror them to the best that we could, applied a 2.44 nautical mile wide corridor based on some guidance from primarily European nav guidance for offshore wind farms. And then, as you'll notice in the next slide, there's some areas of overlap between the actual separation of the lease areas and the lease area boundaries that are would have no surface occupancy to give us that full wide corridor. Next slide, please. And here you can see that in this slide where there's a slight overlap between the difference between the separation and the overlap. Okay, next slide. So delving into Hudson South a little bit more is roughly some of the guidance or what we did in accounting for how to divide that area up. It's roughly equal size for commercial viability and size. Includes the transit lanes, incorporating traffic patterns, fisheries and DOD concerns. Trying to lay out in a manner that reduces wake effect between the different facilities, and also can facilitate a fair return on the government pursuant to our obligations under the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. Next slide, please. So again, going over these dates. So the environmental assessment, we're anticipating a target date of July 2021, that's coming up soon, for the notice of availability on the draft EA. That will have a 30-day comment period. And then following that, there'll be a notice of availability of the final EA with the, if appropriate, a finding of no significant impact. For the proposed sale notice piece, we published the proposed sale notice on June 14th. So that launched the 60-day comment period, which will conclude in August 13th. And following that, there'll be a final sale notice with a minimum 30-day waiting period, and then anticipated a final lease sale in late 21 or early 2022. Next slide, please. So in that proposed sale notice, we have several questions that I think are important for the council's consideration and weighing in on, including the number, size, orientation, and location of the proposed areas, which lease areas, if any, should be prioritized for inclusion or exclusion from this lease sale and future lease sales, alternative subdivisions, the transit corridors, reflections on proposed transit corridors. We also have some very new provisions for stakeholder engagement. BOEM has a new lease requirement included in that notice and in the attached the lease documents. A lease stipulation that would require lessees to provide semi-annual progress reports that summarize engagement with existing ocean users. So what we have already in several of our leases is the requirement for a fisheries communication plan, but there hadn't been like a kind of a feedback mechanism to know how well fisheries communication plan was working. So now there's a regular reporting back on the effectiveness of that fisheries communication plan. The idea is that it would be, you know, somehow publicly available so that affected constituents can look at it and say, oh, that looks like a great correct summary, or perhaps let us know that that summary isn't accurate. This is what's really happening in this particular situation. Anyway, the idea is to improve coordination between lessees and fisheries, as well as other stakeholders and tribes. And then lastly, a good question is the prescribed wet layouts. Should BOEM consider prescribing a uniform and aligned turbine layouts to these areas? And, you know, potentially what would the council recommend that those be? Okay, next slide, please. I wanted to very briefly touch upon some of the environmental studies. Actually, we just published the new studies development plan beginning with 2022, it includes 2022, I think. That's available on our website now. It has a new cover, so it'll look a little different when you first go there. We're now beginning reviewing the study ideas that are included in that new studies development plan by the Standing Committee on Offshore Science and Assessment, COSA. I think there's some members of the council who might be members of the Ocean Studies Board at the National Academies, which there's some crossover there between the COSA and the Ocean Studies Board, I believe, or has been in the past. Results of studies are then incorporated into our environmental assessment decision-making process. So there, I think there was a question earlier, how is the data used? And any types of projects, it's an iterative process where we learn and then make changes as we learn. So next slide, please. I know for this council, we have a new report that should be posted very soon on hydrodynamic modeling. It models all the southern New England areas this is just a snapshot of summer flounder, but it models Atlantic sea scallops, silver hake, and summer flounder. And that really, as I said, that report will be available very soon. It's just in the final review phase. So it has four offshore wind scenarios, basically from a single lease area to a full build out for all those southern New England areas. And that's it there. Next slide. I just a reminder, we do have other fishery studies that are ongoing. The movement patterns of fish in southern New England, I think that one's more commonly referred to as like the Cox Ledge cod study. That's being carried out by the New England Fisheries, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Also, in part with the Northeast Fisheries Science Center in Hui, we have our black sea bass and squid acoustic impact studies. So the part one should be wrapping up very shortly, and part two is just beginning. And that includes hopefully some in situ studies, actually out in the water, looking at black sea bass and squid behavioral reactions to pile driving. Also ongoing is a CERCLAM economic impact model. And then, as Andy already alluded to, Boehm is supporting those bottom trawl survey yellow boxes that was on Andy's last slide, or one of his last slides. Next slide, please. I think that's it. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Oh, I guess I was prompted to ask a question from Bonnie. I meant to actually incorporate that as I was going, and then I forgot. There's only three federal agencies that have authority. I think Andy and Peter, correctly referred to it. It's the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So the NMFS has authority under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and the ROD, they have that authority in the ROD under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And the Army Corps of Engineers is the other person that signs a record of decision on offshore wind projects under, I think it's the River and Harbors Act. And then thirdly is Boehm as the lead agency under the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. So those are the three statutory authorities that have the ability within their statutory authorities to approve or disapprove a project.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hooker. I appreciate that. So go to the council for any questions. I don't know if it's better we go back three slides to the slide that said council considerations. Dr. Sisselwein.
Just very quickly to Brian, you mentioned the authorities of Corps of Engineers, Boehm, and National Marine Fisheries Service. The National Marine Fisheries Service, Casey mentioned Marine Mammal Protection Act. What about the Endangered Species Act? Wouldn't the National Marine Fisheries Service also have authority under that act as well? Thank you.
I guess what I mean by authority is in the ROD. So with the Endangered Species Act and with the Magnuson-Stevens EFH provisions, Boehm consults with NMFS on those two actions, and NMFS develops reasonable and prudent measures that that Boehm would need to adapt and adopt to reduce the effects to ESA listed species, and that's part of our decision making process. And the same thing with similarly to the EFH provisions, those EFH conservation recommendations that Boehm must consider in approving a project. But I think what I was trying to get at is the ability, the actual authority to approve the project is with those other authorities. If NMFS were to issue a jeopardy determination under the Endangered Species Act, I think it would likely result in an agency not adopting or it would be a much different decision a decision point if a jeopardy decision was reached with NMFS. So whether that effectively is a no-go, I'd have to consult the record on that. I'm not familiar with what an agency has done when they've reached a jeopardy determination. But
okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thanks, Brian, for the presentation. I do have a question about the stakeholder engagement report. The lease stipulation says they must provide a semi-annual progress report. It's not clear to me what standard they're being held to. Do they just have to file a report? Are there a certain number of meetings? Do they have to demonstrate that they've considered the information, or is this just a paperwork exercise?
No, we hope. I mean, I think that's important feedback that we're looking for is, you know, what elements, and again, it could be, if you're looking at the fisheries communication plan, you know, are there pieces that we could beef up in the fisheries communication plan that would be reflected in the semi-annual, you know, progress report? I think that's the type of feedback that we're looking for. I think the intent is not to be have it be just a paper exercise. It's to actually be able to look at a project and see how effectively you know, that communication is occurring between a lessee and ocean users, such as the commercial and recreational fisheries. So if you feel that there's not enough there, I think we would be open to recommendations on what elements you would like to see in either the fisheries communication plan or in the semi-annual progress reports.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Salerno, then Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Yeah, Brian, I kind of want to, if you could kind of clarify a little more about the transit corridors. You said that you guys are looking at a 2.44 nautical mile width. Those seem kind of wide, and I'm kind of curious if that's just for this project or this is kind of like moving forward that you're going to be looking at more significantly wider transit link corridors.
I don't think we've made it a policy that this is what you know, what we're going to use moving forward, going forward. Again, this is part of a proposed sale notice. I think we're are accepting comment on that. I think if it's successful, it could be used as a model for future projects, but it's not not written in stone or not any kind of new policy that will you know, definitely be what is used for transit corridors and future projects.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, so I'm going to follow up on Tom's question. So that report, to make it useful, I would think that we would have to have some sort of a give and take in it. Like, so for instance, Boehm had decided to make those transit lanes 250 feet wide. I'm going to the extreme. Okay. And the industry said that was too narrow and they needed 500 feet and laid out their rationale for the 500 foot transit lanes. I mean, that report should include details on how you took the industry's input and you either changed your policy or kept the same policy based on the rationale that you had laid out before, as opposed to the rationale that the industry laid out for their side of the, if you understand what I mean, Brian.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like how the sausage is made kind of detail where it's, and I think that's an important point. I think something we struggled with in developing these stipulations, right? So the lease stipulations are meant to be, you know, kind of in, not kind of enforceable terms and conditions on a lease. And how do we get to what you're talking about? How do we look at a report and say this is sufficient? It adequately describes that. But I think that is a challenge. And one that I think is a great comment on you know, how to ensure that concerns are meaningfully addressed. in those progress reports.
Thank you.
So I accept that, and I think that's a challenge in this reporting requirement that we've struggled with, and are, as I mentioned to Mr. Neese, I think a great comment on and open to suggestions on how that could look.
Yep. Thank you, Brian.
Okay, I don't see anybody else from the council. I'm going to go to the public, and please, as before, just ask your questions. Mr. Smolowitz, then Ms. Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, how come on these lease sales, BOEM does not consider a maximum size to each lease and a spacing between wind farms like they do in Europe, looking at, I think, 4 to 14 kilometers between wind farms? That would sort of get rid of the transit lane problem if, in fact, you guys did that. So I'm just curious why you don't. Thank you.
I think the answer is that we evaluated several factors, including looking at wind wake loss between the different facilities. I think if you look at that current slide, that thumbnail that's on your screen, I think the predominant wind direction is from that, southwest to a northeast direction. So there is that separation. Those transit lanes do offer a separation, between facilities that are downwind of one another. So we did try to take that into account, and that's where it was a good synergy between the navigation lanes and separation of lease areas. Lease areas that are kind of more side by side in east west didn't, from our analysis, weren't going to have that same wake effect loss on each other that the ones that are downwind would have. But I imagine there may be members of the offshore wind community that may be commenting on that in the proposed sale notice as well. But that's kind of the philosophy there. With the separation that's currently adopted in the PSN.
Hey, Ms. Brady and Ms. Almeida, you had your hand up, but it's gone now. So I'll give you an opportunity to put it back up. Ms. Brady.
Hi, Brian. It's Bonnie. How are you?
Good. Good to hear from you, Bonnie.
Bronnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I've got a couple of questions, so I'll whip them off there so I don't get hit by the timer. First of all, why didn't BOEM require any project level mitigation, survey mitigation under the Vineyard Wind Plan? As I asked Mr. Lipsky before, I guess NIMS didn't have that ability, but BOEM did, and I'd like to know why they didn't. Secondly, I see on the stakeholder engagement, you're talking about lease stipulation requiring semi-annual progress reports. The fisheries communications plans that we have seen so far, they only go one way, from the developer to the fisherman. We have had no interaction in a positive way for the South Fork project or any of the other projects that are in existence now, not even talking about the future ones in the hopper. I'm wondering if this is the comments that will be made regarding the bite can actually have some teeth in them for those that are already in process. We have one fisherman who's lost gear because of the survey boats. There's another company that is telling a fisherman who's presently fishing he's going to have to remove his gear, and even though he's fishing it right now during a time period. So we have absolutely no way. I know I helped write one of the appeals of a refusal to pay for destroyed gear. Wind companies themselves don't have to give out the information as to where they fish, and then they expect the fishermen to give the points and then kind of blindly tell whether or not they hit the bullseye. How do we address the issues that are happening now so they don't trickle down to the nightmares of the future? Thank you.
Sure. I'll do my best to respond to your questions, Bonnie. So for the first one, you asked about project level mitigation. So I think
survey mitigation specifically, yes. Regarding the survey boats for NIMS.
Project level survey mitigation, yes. So I think Andy had a good response in the sense of it is clearly articulated in the record of decision. So I encourage you to look at the record of decision, and that's what the our official word is on that. However, I'll try to elaborate, but recognizing the record of decision, if I say anything that comes contrary to that, it's the record of decision is correct. It's very difficult to on the survey mitigation aspect to ascribe a very discrete mitigation from an individual project to each of those of survey buckets that Andy listed. So we, in the as described in the ROD, decided that we wanted to do a regional federal survey mitigation program, and that's something that the agencies are actively working on. And I think we had a joint notice on our website, and it's also as well.
Would that be like monitoring up front before anything happens? I believe that is done in the oil industry, is it not? So that you can determine whether there are performance measures that occur before full build out occurs.
There is monitoring that occurs before before the facility is built, and meanwhile the NIMS surveys are not stopping, prior to surveys or construction either. So all those, the existing survey regime is ongoing, and then for project
right. Level, but are there performance measures that aren't? Don't they do that for oil and gas? I thought they did. So that if there were some.
Maybe I'm not completely understanding performance measures for the survey.
So let's say that if you know that there's a change in distribution based upon what occurs, that there's something that they start out with monitoring to measure so that if a change occurs after the wind facility is built, that can be addressed with some form of mitigation. Sorry, I was losing internet for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the objective of these pre-construction and post-construction monitoring surveys, which Vineyard Wind is the only project that is approved, has agreed to do, is directly getting to, I think, that what you're talking about is there an effect?
Right, but Brian, I guess I don't want to take up any more time because we can talk later. But the question I have is, why isn't Bohm initiating that as opposed to what the developers are volunteering? That's the issue. And I can catch up with you in email. Sorry for that.
That would be okay. Great if you did. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm going to go to Ms. Runnebaum.
Jocelyn Runnebaum from Nature Conservancy in Maine. Thank you for this presentation. I had a clarifying question and then a follow-up question. So for the stakeholder engagement, I wanted to verify if that was other interested users or if it was really just intended to engage existed ocean users. So just wanting to know who the intended audience is there, if it's broader than the fishing industry. And then my specific question is, what mechanism does BOEM have to ensure that stakeholder engagement is occurring? So if these semi-annual reports are indicating that there's insufficient stakeholder engagement, how do you ensure that that is going to happen in the future? Thank you.
Sure. Although I think the measure calls out fisheries and tribal communications more directly, I don't think it's the semiannual progress reporting is limited to just those two groups that are specifically identified. However, if you feel that needs to be, it's not clear, I think a comment to that point would be good. It regarding the mechanism to ensure it is occurring, I think is exactly why this stipulation was developed in the first place. Because I think, as we kind of heard Bonnie talking about a minute ago, is that the fisheries communication plan didn't seem to be in and of itself effective in ensuring that there's meaningful engagement. So we added this additional measure. So yes, it's The idea is that we would monitor that and review those reports when they're submitted semi-annually, and Bowen would have the ability to comment on it. Potentially, I think the idea is that that those would be publicly available in some form, and that the public could comment on them as well. I think was a thought to alert Bowen if there was something there that was not accurate, so that we could consider that if and when we were to receive an actual construction operations plan, and something that the construction operations plan didn't accurately describe how a particular layout or mitigation measure was arrived at.
Jocelyn?
I think so. I guess I'm wondering, not to debate this issue, I guess I'm just wondering if it's not met, would a project not go forward, or
I don't think we've determined that. It depends, I think, a lot on what the difference is, or how big of a gap something was. This is where you're getting in, potentially into qualitative versus quantitative, like assessment of how that engagement were to occur. This doesn't, the proposed sale notice does not, propose a particular threshold by which a construction operations plan could not be determined sufficient for further review. But I think that is something that, BOEM would have to consider in that construction operations plan review, is the type of feedback we see in those semi-annual progress reports.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Mr. Kalin, I'm going to give you the last shot from the public. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, hey, Brian, it's Jeff Kalin with Lens Fisheries. Been obviously listening to your presentations for a number of years now, and this issue is really heating up. So your presentation, there's actually something in here I found positive today for a change, so I'll give you credit for that. And that has to do with a 2.25 mile or whatever it is transit lane proposals that apparently mirror European standards, which frankly I'd never heard about before today with all the meetings we've been to. So my question is there any hope that that same wider transit lane concept could also be applied to the two areas underdeveloped down here off the Jersey Shore, Atlantic Shores, and Ocean Wind, because we haven't gotten a very positive response in meetings with those groups so far about a transit lane that may be as workable as the one that BOEM's proposing here. So those are my questions, and I do really appreciate it. To me, this represents a little bit of progress finally, and I think a lot of us have been looking for that, particularly in a regional context. So I'll stop there. I know you're over time, Mr. Chairman, so thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Jeff. Those lease areas were already let, and as you're well aware, for Ocean Wind and Atlantic Shores. And so where we are now with them is actually reviewing those construction and operations plans. And I think that is, something that could be considered, through the NEPA process. But it's not the same place where we are now with, issuing new leases and learning from previous comments on separation of different lease areas and so forth. So I don't have a great answer for you now. I think that, again, through the comment periods on Ocean Wind and Atlantic Shores, I think that's something that could be considered through that NEPA process. I think I mentioned earlier in the presentation, not like a new BOEM standard for all projects moving forward.
Yeah, that's disappointing. We need that. So I'll leave it there. And thanks for the answer, Brian. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to go to Ms. Bachman and get her presentation started as far as this particular conversation. We are going to have a discussion about comment opportunities, and the New York Bite is one of them. So we can continue this conversation and cover two things once we get rolling. So, Michelle, it's all yours.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll try and be brief. I have a few non-wind updates and then some wind updates, and talk about some different comment opportunities that the council might take in the next month to 2 months. Next slide, please. So to switch gears from wind just for a few moments, the council obviously has a priority for this year, a multi-year priority to look into whether or not you might want to initiate a new habitat management action for the Northern Edge of the
Earth. Take it from me.
So we're in the early stages of this at the plan development team. I gave an overview of sort of where we were at the end of the habitat amendment at the last council meeting in April. The committee's talked about this a bit, just in terms of kind of where we have been. So the plan development team is basically developing some information to support decision-making on the part of the committee, and then a recommendation from the committee to the council. And when we talk about the Northern Edge, I think to be clear, we're considering both the area that's within closed area two, that sort of upside down L-shaped area as our existing habitat closure on the Northern Edge, but a broader section of the bank as well. So any information or sort of background we're providing will be in a broader context. Next slide. Thanks. So just to outline briefly what's in the white paper, the PDT's had a couple of different conversations about this. You can see in the materials for this meeting, we provided the summary of the conversation we had last week and a few earlier meetings as well that you can find on the council website. Just talking about the scope of this, what's going to be included. And our focus here is really to provide new information and put that in the context of work that we've already done. So just one example of new information that I think will be quite relevant to the discussion is the RSA-funded before after control impact dredge study that Dr. Gallagher and his colleagues did a couple of years ago that looks at recovery over different time periods, which is a type of study that, you know, is relatively rare in the fishing impact literature. So that'll be, I think, quite valuable. And then there's some other new information I think we can pull in as well. So we're going to be working on some of the more straightforward sections that are more informational in nature this summer, kind of independently as people are in and out of the office for vacations and such. And then late summer, early fall, I think the PDT will be getting together to talk more about some advice and kind of wrapping together, you know, how we would recommend the committee think about this issue. And we'll be writing sort of more integrated sections of the white paper for consideration of the committee. And we can certainly, as we're going, have a bit of a dialogue with the committee to make sure that we understand, you know, what this action might look like, and that we're providing information to them that'll be useful, and that we're not kind of omitting any considerations. So no action today, just a quick update. The next slide, please. Just related to aquaculture, we have had some conversations at past meetings about aquaculture opportunity areas. I think this has probably been raised in the context of CCC briefings as well, as the topic has come up there. So we are obviously not one of the first two regions for AOAs, but I think it'll be interesting for us to see how that process unfolds, what kind of information is provided, and what we might expect if the Northeast is identified as an AOA in the future. So we'll see, for example, these regional Atlas products coming out in the, you know, I assume at some point this summer. And then similar to the way that the first two regions were announced last December, we'll see, I think, regions 3 and 4 announced later this year. Chris Squatchy, I think, spoke with the council, certainly with the committee in the past few months, but they will be looking at the scoping comments from December. We did submit comments in response to that notice when deciding which regions will be next. There was primarily opposition in those comments from our region. Some, you know, mixed feedback. So take from that what you will about whether we're likely to be one of regions 3 or 4. There's a lot more information in the presentation that's linked here. So more updates later, no action today. Next slide, please. Something that we may take action on today would be to send a comment to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on the Blue Water Fisheries Project. There's a notice in the binder. Hopefully you had a chance to just skim quickly. Obviously, as we've talked about in the context of our aquaculture policy, multiple different types of permits and authorizations are required for these aquaculture projects. So a couple of those at the federal level are a U.S. Army Corps of Engineer permit for the structures in the water, and then an EPA permit for the discharge. Obviously, the project's also going to require NEPA analysis. And so the question I think that's being wrestled with now is whether an EIS or an EA will be done. If there's an EIS, which appears likely just based on precedent from other similar projects, and there's two or more agencies involved, then based on the executive order on seafood competitiveness, I think the one from last May, then NOAA would be the lead agency on that. So I think we could probably submit some pretty brief comments in response to this notice. Any EPA that, as I understand it, and I'm no particular expert on how these agencies do their permitting for aquaculture, but I think the Army Corps, you know, early in the process kind of front loads this initial scoping period, whereas EPA, I think, waits longer into the process and does a lot of the work and analysis before putting something out for comment. And I'm probably butchering exactly how Chris Scolacci explained that to me, so apologies to him. It's my fault, not his. But there will be an EPA, you know, sort of comment periods later, as well as comment periods under NEPA. So this is our only bite at the apple, but I think for now we could certainly refer the Army Corps to our aquaculture policy, recommend robust scoping and analysis, including development of an EIS for the project. So when I get to the end of the slides, we can have, I guess, a combined discussion of submitting comments under these various opportunities. Next slide, please. Just a quick reminder that we are engaged in the Northeast Regional Habitat Assessment. This is a project that many groups are involved in, including us, the Mid-Atlantic Council. Jessica Coakley is our project coordinator, and the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, also other federal agencies, Nature Conservancy Commission is involved with it. So this is the sort of overall timeline for the project, which Tori Kettner, our contractor, put together, I believe, and kind of gives you a good snapshot of everything we're working on. There's been a lot of modeling work lately that Tori and Chris Hack, our postdoc, have been spearheading, really trying to figure out the methods to use, the best diagnostics, and just the input data sets, and just trying to make sure that everything is kind of running well and making sense. And then later in the year, I think early next year, we'll be delving into the results in detail and really trying to figure out the best ways to present the information from the assessment to policymakers. And so I think there will be points later on in the process where we're potentially working through the Habitat Committee, for example, to gather some feedback and kind of road test some of the products from the assessment. And we are also coming up, I think people may have seen, we put out a request for proposals for a contractor to do some work related to the assessment, and we're kind of finalizing the pieces for that. And so we'll be bringing someone on to integrate this work with the Habitat Climate Vulnerability Assessment and the Species Climate Vulnerability Assessment, developing some narratives that I think will pull together an array of issues related to individual species and sort of really kind of important points to consider in managing those species with respect to their habitat use and how that may change under a changing climate. Next slide, please. So back to offshore wind, because you probably missed it in the last 5 minutes. So there was a ROSA meeting last Thursday. Dr. Susan Wine attended on behalf of the council, and I also was there listening in the background. You can grab the agenda here, and I believe they do eventually post the slides, but I didn't see them when I looked yesterday yet. So there's three topics really that were covered: this idea of a regional fisheries research approach or framework. The concept here is kind of what are the big picture questions, what are the priority questions, because we recognize we don't have the resources to do everything. Which of those questions will support decision-making and how. It's not totally clear exactly what this will look like yet, but there's a lot of support for doing this sort of work and for ROSA helping to coordinate it. Certainly even if there's additional resources, like was discussed under, I think, Andy's presentation, that might come in terms of survey mitigation and such. I think, you know, Tom and I were talking about what some of those numbers are. I think we're talking, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 million potentially, just for with eight for survey mitigation. So there's hopefully some funds that are coming at part of this, but this would be more of a kind of a regional sense of really what the priority questions are. And I think Rosa is a good venue for having those conversations just because of the multiple different groups that are involved in Rosa. And I think Mike may have some more comments on this when I'm done with my presentation, because he's given this issue a lot of thought. Also, topics that came up were the idea of, as say developers are doing fishing gear surveys, standardizing those as best as possible, so that they can be used, you know, in conjunction with each other. Obviously, there's many variables in terms of how gear is fished, and so getting everything as close as possible at the outset, you know, kind of helps with that consistency. And so there's a lot of general support for that, and there's some really good sort of detailed points made by people who, you know, work on the water fishing and are familiar with gears and also with fishery surveys. And then finally, this idea of coming up with sort of pathways to incorporate fishermen's ecological knowledge into the process. You know, a point that was made that I hadn't quite thought of, and maybe Rachel thinks about this kind of thing all the time, but, you know, the idea that we do surveys routinely, but we do sort of these episodic, occasional collections of fishermen's ecological knowledge, and the idea that maybe there should be some kind of routine pipeline for pulling this information into the process, rather than just thinking of it as, you know, a series of one-off studies. Other update, I think people have probably seen that Mike Cole is the new research director at ROSA. I think they have a new administrative staffer as well. So the organization is growing, and then you can grab the link to the monitoring framework and guidelines that I shared previously, but it's still a relatively new product of theirs. Next slide, please. Just to update you, the plan development team has been talking about the council's wind energy policy. This is something that we adopted 3 years ago. And it was actually originally drafted in 2015 by the Mid-Atlantic Council, and they've been using it since the beginning of 2016. So in reviewing it, it's still relevant and appropriate, but I think there's some opportunity to enhance some of the elements in there and add some new ones. So you can see some potential additions listed here. A lot of these are things we've already talked about today. So we're going to work on detailed language suggestions, coordinating with others as needed, including Mid-Atlantic Council staff who work with the policy routinely as we write joint comments with them. So coordination along, you know, between the two councils, I think, seems important here. And we'll bring some ideas to the committee at a following meeting. And next slide, please. So getting into some comment opportunities, Brian covered all this, so I won't go into any detail, but you can see the letter that we submitted in response to the previous comment period, where they were looking for input on, well, in part, they were looking for input on what to include in EA. So we did submit comments. Next slide, please. But I think, you know, sort of pertinent to this comment opportunity, there were some specific questions for stakeholders. This is very similar to the slide that Brian had provided. And this is where BOEM is asking for input on some of these lease stipulations related to progress reports on engagement and methods or, you know, mechanisms to improve coordination and engagement. So I think this is a distinct opportunity, and there were already some comments made earlier, things that we might say here beyond sort of what we provided about, you know, other considerations that we thought were important in response to the April comment period. So at the end of the slides, we can talk about how the council wants to move forward on this. Next slide, please. And so this is something that's still pending, and this slide is actually wrong. There isn't a date for the comment period closing yet because the NOI hasn't been published. But, you know, I suppose Brian can correct me, but I assume it's soon, and they're still have these scoping meetings scheduled and have just recently posted at maybe yesterday or today, the construction operations plan. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but you can grab it on the BOEM website. So, you know, this may be the wrong date, but in any case, the comment opportunity will close a month from whenever the notice of intent publishes in the Federal Register. We have submitted some other letters of this sort recently for Revolution Wind and Ocean Wind on what we think is important to include in the EIS. So, you know, this would be an opportunity again for us to comment on this issue. Next slide, please. Okay. So just very in brief, I think one of the things that's different about the Empire Wind Project is they're looking at sort of two distinct facilities within the lease area, but under the umbrella of the single EIS. And you can see the specifics here, some of the kind of elements of the project. We've commented in the past about, you know, a range of different alternatives that might be considered. For example, the Revolution Wind letter, we talked about a habitat alternative for recommending removal of turbines in complex habitat areas. So these are some of Bone's suggestions here. Certainly we could make other suggestions. I think we have a pretty good template for these kind of letters at this point, but there's always obviously unique details pertinent to each project that we would want to cover. Next slide, please. And then finally, I think we've talked in the past about these port access route studies. This is a bit south of us, but it could be of interest to the council, especially in regards to some ports used by the scallop fishery. So the Coast Guard has recently issued a draft report. We have commented also on sort of the initial scoping for some of these PAR studies, but in this case, there's a report available and they have a proposal about five different measures for consideration. And so you can see, it might be hard to see in the chart. This is the Coast Guard's chart from the report, but the difference between the solid lanes and then the hatching are some of the modifications that they're looking at. And in particular, this addition in the middle that would have two-way traffic. So they're looking for comments on the measures. That's something that we could comment on. I believe the Mid-Atlantic Council is going to be dropping comments. Julia, I can work with her on those if we decide we wanted to provide any feedback to the Coast Guard. Eric and I had a bit of an initial discussion of kind of whether these seemed reasonable, and it seems like perhaps they are, but, you know, certainly more feedback and input would be useful. So that's all I have, and I'm happy to take questions or we can discuss whether we should write some more letters. So thanks.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fogman. So this is what I'd like to do. I would like to see if the council has any questions about the beginning of Michelle's presentation about issues that don't require any action today, in particular the Northern Edge. This is only a council update, so I'm not going to go to the public, but I strongly encourage the public to participate in our next Habitat Committee meeting, in which case we'll take your questions at that time. I'm sorry about that. I really value the public input, but we got to keep moving. So any questions from the council on the beginning of this presentation? Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good afternoon. It's pouring down rain here. It's a little hard to hear myself. I don't have a question, Mr. Chairman, but if I may put forth a comment, if that would be okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Pete.
So, this Chesapeake Bay PAR study, and I'm sure there will be other PAR studies in the future. We did not receive an update at the Mid-Atlantic Council on the PAR study. If there would, I would have made the same comment. And then I think that the council should be commenting on the fact that, you know, when the Coast Guard did an earlier PAR study recommending the 1 mile recommendation for windmill separation, I don't think that they took into the consideration the cumulative impacts of all of the wind energy sites that up and down the coastline. When they did that, and I think that we should make them aware that we have some real concerns when it comes to the cumulative impacts of 1,400 miles up and down the coastline of this picket fence that's going to be out in front of us, and the operational navigational headaches that it can provide. So. I appreciate you allowing me to make that comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Yeah, it's my understanding that the original PARs up here was not in the face of cumulative effects. So I agree with that. So anybody else from the council? Okay, seeing none. So what I'd like to do now is I have a motion. It's not a committee motion, but I'd like to put that motion up on the board. We can talk about it and address whether or not we should comment. So, Joan, if you got that motion, I'll be happy to read it. Okay. My motion is that staff develop comments on behalf of the council. Somebody's got to mute themselves, please. Okay. That staff develop comments on behalf of the council jointly with the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council, where appropriate, on the following issues: U.S. Army Corps of Engineers permit application for the Blue Water Fisheries aquaculture product, Bohm's proposed sale notice for the New York Bight leasing, Bohm's notice of intent for the Empire Wind project, and the U.S. Coast Guard's draft approaches to Chesapeake Bay port access route study. And if I get a second, I don't really think I need any rationale, but we can address the motion if I get a second. At this point, I can't see. So, who was that?
Mr. Pappalardo.
Mr. Pappalardo seconds the motion. Thank you, John. So I'm going to open it up to the council for discussion on this motion. And somebody else is going to have to call on people. Mr. Chairman, maybe you could do it. Dr. Chairman.
Yeah, I can hop back in. Council members first to the motion. Seeing none, out to the audience. Seeing none, my thought maybe is if there's no objection, we could adopt this by consensus. If that's anybody object, please raise their hand. Seeing that none, this motion will be adopted by consensus. Turn it back to Chairman Reed.
Thank you, Dr. Chairman. Michelle, do you have anything else?
I was just going to comment that typically when we write these letters, we put them in front of the Habitat Committee for review because they're the committee that deals with these issues. But certainly, if anybody else has any feedback for me directly, I'm happy to chat about these issues and take whatever input you've got. So.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that, Dr. Chairman, that concludes the Habitat report.
Great. Thank you very much. And what we do, why don't we take a 10-minute break and we'll come back. We updated the agenda and we're going to do the scallop biop first before the scallop committee report. So why don't we take a 10-minute break and then come back with a scallop biop presentation. Thank you. Thank you.